We will identify at first round of targets this week, and we're also going to impose strong export controls.
The U.S. government takes action against the Myanmar coup. This is Friday, the 12th of February, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, we have the latest developments from Myanmar, another day of impeachment proceedings in the U.S. Senate. Biden talks with Xi and proving that you've been vaccinated against COVID-19. That and more on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. slapped additional sanctions on Myanmar following a military coup on February 1st. The crisis has emerged as an early test of President Joe Biden's foreign policy as his administration pledges to defend democracy and seeks to counter China's rising influence in the region. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara reports.
Protests continue in Myanmar following the February 1st military coup. On Wednesday, President Joe Biden announced he is imposing new sanctions on the country's military leaders, their business interests, and family members. Those are on top of sanctions already applied starting in 2017 for atrocities against Myanmar's Rohingya minority.
We will identify at first round of targets this week, and we're also going to impose strong exports controls. We're freezing U.S. assets that benefit the Burmese government while maintaining our support for health care, civil society groups, and other areas that benefit the people of Burma directly.
With few economic ties and sanctions already in place, U.S. leverage on Myanmar is limited. But sanctions targeting the junta matched by U.S. allies can be effective, according to analysts. Gregory Poling is a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Maybe in cooperation with other parties, the Japanese, for instance, who are major players in the economy, the U.S. can help shift the cost-benefit analysis a little bit and incentivize compromise and a return to democracy. But if we think that we're going to slap sanctions and Minhong Hwang is going to say, I'm sorry, we are mistaken.
Washington is working with regional allies, including Japan, India, and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, who have signaled their support for U.S. outreach to Myanmar. Tai Wei Lim is a research fellow at the National University of Singapore's East Asian Institute.
Continued engagement, prevention of isolation of Myanmar, and to have U.S. Play a constructive role in trying to reach this broad consensus.
The Myanmar coup followed accusations of democratic backsliding in the region, including in Brunei, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and the Philippines. Addressing them in the context of strategic competition with China is seen as a challenge for the administration, said Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Woodrow Wilson Center.
How do we compromise and play the long game and keep channels open, even with regimes that we object to? How can we do that and back off of an absolute declaration of principles in order to compete with China while still claiming that the grounds of our competition with China is in some way ideological?
The U.S. has been criticized as hypocritical for sanctioning countries after a violent siege of the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Donald Trump, who falsely claimed the U.S. presidential election was stolen, the same pretext the Myanmar military used for the coup. Gregory Poling of CSIS.
I don't think it was ever all that effective when U.S. officials went into Southeast Asian states preaching, but now they'll just be laughed at.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says there is bipartisan support for Myanmar sanctions, but acknowledged America has work to do at home as well.
Pulling our country together, revitalizing our own democratic foundation, building more unity, as President Biden has talked about, that will be an important part of us operating effectively in the world.
Analysts say some allies may question U.S. resolve in the region, given Washington's foreign policy shifts with each new administration. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
We have more on what's happening in Myanmar momentarily. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Cambodia's government has decided to suspend its two-week military exercise with China next month. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is signaling it's prepared to confront and, when necessary, militarily counter a rising China. India and China are pulling back troops from a disputed border in the Himalayas. A group of children, some as young as two, have been rescued from an alleged child abuse ring in the Philippines after a tip-off from Australian authorities. And Malaysia says it will extend its free COVID-19 vaccination program to all foreigners residing in the country, including students, refugees, and undocumented migrants. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. In Myanmar, protesters took to the streets for a fifth day on Wednesday, vowing to keep up demonstrations against the coup even after a woman was shot and critically wounded during clashes the previous day. To get a broader picture of where things stand, I spoke with VOA Burmese Service Chief Tan Luen Tun. We talked about the newest developments in Myanmar, which he refers to as Burma.
Military has announced wide-ranging curfew's order. So that is basically night curfew, 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., especially in a daytime, no gathering more than five people on the street. So effectively, that street protests are prohibited. And then also on Tuesday, there was a kind of bloodshed. There's a kind of forceful suppressions of the street demonstrations in Naypyidaw that seriously injured two people and another 20 people over there. And there has been a lot of arrests as well. But despite of those new regulation or new restrictions and also suppression, we are still seeing widespread street demonstrations in the daytime, including Rangoon, big city, and then the whole country. So as far as we see, the street demonstrations were not what I call interrupted by the security force, although there's a restriction about no more than five people allowed together on the street.
I have read that many of the protesters are some of the ethnic minorities in Myanmar, Burma. Is that indeed the case, and how is that happening?
Since the demonstrations and protests against the military takeover is nationwide, so Burma is composed of a lot of ethnic nationalities and different divisions, different ethnic areas. So it's no wonder that we see different ethnic groups took to the streets to show their will against the military regime.
Do people who are protesting feel safe?
Since that there are no such kind of continuations of forceful suppressions after Tuesday, so general sense is that people are quite feel safe on the street, especially this time. The demonstrations are in a form or a little bit of a kind of a new form of demonstrations. I have to say that it has been arranged by the those people, young people, so-called name themselves as a kind of Generation Z generation. So they are young people. They are not actually is a follower or a kind of a member of any kind of political parties. They just want to express their will against the military takeover or military rule in the country. So mostly they are quite well-to-do and a kind of a new media savvy people. So they exchange information on the kind of internet and social media, and then they take the kind of a creative forms of demonstrations or protests. It's like a parade. So Burmese government or military seem to be honest, allow these people showing in that way about their will. But at the same time, there's another separate movement called Civil Disobedient Movement. That is a little bit more serious. All those people are what I call refuse to go to the workplace.
VOA Burmese Service Chief Tan Luen Tun speaking with us via Skype. Happening now in Asia. Chinese state media reports a spacecraft known as Tianwen-1 has successfully entered orbit around Mars, the first step in an ambitious mission that includes landing a rover on the surface of the planet. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happier with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Here in Washington, House impeachment managers Wednesday showed never-before-seen footage from the January 6th riot of Trump supporters at the U.S. Capitol. The video capped the first day of Democrats' opening argument that former President Donald Trump was directly responsible for the attempt to overturn the counting of Electoral College votes for Joe Biden. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The vice president and U.S. senators just steps away from likely attack. Police beaten by rioters. Scenes that paint a fuller picture of the violent threat inside the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th riot, revealed in previously unreleased security footage shown by House impeachment managers on the opening day of their argument that former President Donald Trump was directly responsible for that riot. House impeachment manager Representative Jamie Raskin.
We will prove that the impeached president was no innocent bystander whose conduct was totally appropriate and should be a standard for future presidents, but that he incited this attack, and he saw it coming.
Impeachment managers arguing Trump stopped the steel rally ahead of the riot was not an isolated event, but the culmination of months of election fraud allegations and incitement of supporters to attack the electoral process. Democratic Representative Eric Swalwell.
This was never about one speech. He built this mob over many months with repeated messaging until they believed that they had been robbed of their vote and they would do anything to stop the certification.
Trump's electoral challenge failed in U.S. courts in the weeks before the riot, noted the House impeachment managers. Democratic Representative Madeline Dean.
Not a single court, not a single judge agreed that the election results were invalid or should be invalidated.
They laid out evidence they said shows the former president turned to his supporters to stop the Democratic process certifying Joe Biden the winner. Democratic Representative Stacey Plaskett.
Make no mistake, the violence was not just foreseeable to President Trump. The violence was what he deliberately encouraged.
Trump's lawyers present their defense on Friday. They argue Trump was exercising his right to free speech and cannot be held responsible for the chaos. Although critics say Trump's lawyers have struggled to make their case, it is unlikely Trump will be convicted. 17 Republican senators would have to join Democrats in finding him guilty. Brookings Institution fellow John Hudak.
They're beholden to the former president himself. They see that their own political fortunes depend on Trump voters coming out and voting for them in their own Senate races, particularly in Republican states. And so no matter what evidence House managers are going to present at the trial, a significant number of Republicans will ignore them and still vote to acquit the president.
At stake is Trump's ability to run for federal office again. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Hundreds of Thai protesters gathered in Bangkok Wednesday to demand the release of four activists in custody on charges of insulting Thailand's king, a crime punishable by 15 years in prison. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia.
President Joe Biden had his first call as U.S. president with Xi Jinping, a two-hour conversation in which he pressed the Chinese leader about trade and Beijing's crackdown on democracy activists in Hong Kong, as well as other human rights concerns. Reuters' Gloria Tso has more.
U.S. President Joe Biden spoke with Chinese President Xi Jinping for the first time since coming into office on Wednesday evening. Biden stressed human rights concerns and the importance of a free and open Indo-Pacific, while Xi warned that a confrontation between the two nations would be a disaster. Xi also urged that the two sides should reestablish the means to avoid misjudgments, according to the Chinese Foreign Ministry's account of the call. Biden emphasized what he called Beijing's coercive and unfair practices, including its crackdown in Hong Kong, reported human rights abuses in Xinjiang, and increasingly assertive actions in the region, including toward Taiwan, the White House said in a statement. But Xi maintained a hardline tone on Hong Kong, Xinjiang, and Taiwan, which he said were matters of sovereignty and territorial integrity. It was Xi's first call with a U.S. president since he spoke with former President Donald Trump last March. Since then, relations between the two countries have plunged to their worst level in decades, with Trump blaming China for the global health crisis, launching a trade war, sanctioning Chinese officials and firms perceived to be security threats, and challenging Beijing's territorial claims in the South China Sea. Chinese officials have expressed cautious optimism that bilateral relations will improve under Biden and urged Washington to meet Beijing halfway. But the Biden administration has made clear it will continue to maintain pressure on China while also pledging a more multilateral approach. A senior Biden official said the administration will look at adding new targeted restrictions on certain sensitive tech exports to China, and there would be no quick moves to lift Trump's tariffs on Chinese imports.
Gloria Tso reporting, the two leaders spoke Wednesday just hours after Biden announced plans for a Pentagon task force to review U.S. national security strategy in China. Happening in Asia, rescuers raced to free some 35 Indian construction workers trapped in a tunnel 2 days after the hydroelectric dam they were helping to build was swept away by a wall of water from a collapsed glacier. Stay with us for the latest news from and about Asia at voanews.com and all of our digital platforms. COVID vaccinations are ramping up in the United States and the world, but now healthcare experts are tackling the issue of how someone can prove they've been vaccinated. Licia Bacalets has more on this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
A short form, a number of health-related questions, a quick shot, and then a vaccine card. That's the standard process when someone gets a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S. The vaccination card is a small paper that the health professional fills out by hand. Maryland school teacher Maral Sivaslan got one recently.
She told me I can't lose it. I have to have it, and I have to make sure I take it with me when I get my second dose.
The vaccination card is a reminder that in 3 weeks, it's time for the second dose, but also a backup for the nation's electronic record keeping.
First dose.
Everybody who gets a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S., in the state that they're in, that information gets electronically put into the registry.
But Tan says he believes the vaccination certificate can easily be falsified, and wants a new system the World Health Organization is considering.
I think there has to be validation. There has to be a way to validate that information, which is why I think having something that is digitally secure, which is what the smart certificate that WHO is looking at, is needed.
The World Health Organization already has a so-called yellow card, which essentially serves as an official vaccination record needed to enter certain countries. The idea is to do the same for COVID-19 vaccinations. The International Air Transportation Association is suggesting a vaccination app.
Travel Pass is essentially an app which will be designed to be downloaded on a customer's phone, either directly from Apple iOS or Google Play for Android, or through an airline's app. And eventually that would allow a customer to be able to digitally identify themselves.
The International Economic Forum is working on developing a similar digital passport, an app called Common Pass. The computer company IBM is also creating their own app using the Watson supercomputer.
So in the US, everybody is required to send the vaccination activities to the state. And the state keeps this information into a registry. And what we are working on now is connecting the platform to the registries so we can also expose that information back to you.
But relying on an app worries human rights activists who stress that not everyone has a smartphone.
Connecting vaccination with the need to have an expensive smartphone doesn't serve civil liberties or civil rights purposes.
Developers say the apps should be fully functional by the end of 2021. Officials say a lot depends on how fast vaccinations are administered around the world and when countries reopen their borders. Фалеся Бакалец in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
We continue on VOA Asia. Many broadcasters are using a variety of digital radio for high-quality transmissions reaching faraway lands. Michael Sullivan reports on one format that's starting to play an important role in global communications.
More than 2.5 million cars in India are equipped with digital radio mondial receivers, and India's national broadcaster is expanding digital transmissions on medium wave and on shortwave bands that reach across the globe. This broadcast from India was heard in Brazil. DRM can also be sent on long wave or the higher VHF frequencies used by FM broadcasters. This DRM test from Radio Canada International. And I'm getting old. Transmitting high quality audio and multiple programs simultaneously. Ruxandra Obreja is chairman of the Digital Radio Mondial Consortium.
You have at least 3 channels instead of one, or 3 programs instead of one, 3 stations.
Britain's BBC, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, and other broadcast services are testing or using the format, including China, now the world's largest DRM shortwave broadcaster. The United States has done tests through Radio Marti broadcasts to Cuba. This 2009 test from Voice of America was heard in Austria.
I hope you'll join me for the next edition of the program as we enjoy the music of young Mr. Eldar Jankarov.
It was broadcast on shortwave with less of the fading that usually plagues shortwave reception. A retired VOA official, Gerhard Straub, says DRM is radio and more.
Because it's digital data, whether that data is audio, files, images.
The religious broadcaster Trans World Radio sends Bible lessons through DRM to India, China, and Japan. George Ross of Trans World Radio.
And so when it comes to communication, especially getting into areas where we don't have the internet connections, this is the way to go.
DRM's wide coverage with low power, long reach via shortwave, and data capabilities have big advantages over other digital standards. There are challenges, however. Transmitter upgrades are expensive, and there's not yet a large market for DRM receivers, which cost more than their analog counterparts. But prices are coming down, and transmitters use less power while having greater reach than analog transmitters, reaching areas with no broadband connections. Ruxandra Obreja.
People say, oh, radio is yesterday's platform. We are looking to the future. Well, the future is, as usual, very complicated. And it is a mixture of platforms. I don't think television killed the radio. I don't think that the internet killed television.
DRM, she adds, is part of that future. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. It includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibel, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.